You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Activism, protests, rallies, they're an integral part of our democracy, and this time last year we were on the brink of the biggest movement in history, Black Lives Matter. However, organising activism is quite challenging and it takes a lot of time and energy and collaboration when the organisers already have busy personal lives and work lives. We've seen this challenge recently in Tāmaki Makaurau with the recent attempts for a march against sexual violence. These marches didn't end up going ahead. I will speak to one of the organisers soon to find out what happened behind the scenes there, but first I wanted an academic's perspective on the challenges of activism in New Zealand today. So I spoke to Associate Professor of Sociology at Otago University, Marcel Dawson, and I started off by asking her about the role of activism today.
Now, if we think about activism through the ages, largely it centres on social change. You know, a lot of what tends to get studied is social movements that are interested in more progressive forms of change, so things that are aimed at changing the status quo in order to expand social justice. But we also need to remember that there is also activism driven at protecting privilege. So that, you know, in a sense, that is also about social change, but it's about limiting social change. So when it comes to social transformation, there are groups that want to promote it and expand social transformation, but then there are also others who are seeking to maintain a privileged position in society. So we might also see activism coming from quite conservative groups who wish to maintain the status quo. But essentially, the role of activism in society is around social change.
What does that difference look? Is there a difference when those two different groups are taking part in activism? What does that difference kind of look like?
I mean, for me, the central difference would be about what is the issue on the table. In the actual practice of it, it can be quite similar. So, you know, people will take to the streets, they'll launch social media campaigns. So the actual sort of tools of resistance can sometimes be quite similar. But the objective, the actual thing that they want to attain at the end of the day as a result of the activism is quite different.
We've heard that some of the challenges faced by those organising activism are things such as burnout, lack of intersectionality and communication between different groups involved. How do we combat some of these challenges faced by people trying to partake in activism?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, this is sort of one of those age-old questions that activists through the generations will always have to face, and it really takes careful negotiation at each moment of community organising or social movement protesting. Now, I think competing interests really zap one's energy. What are the priorities? So in the context of activism and protest, those sorts of competing interests really, I know you'd mentioned the word burnout, and they really do zap your energy and they can actually stifle struggle. When too much energy is spent on whose interests are the most important, I think there's no energy left to actually advance the struggle. So I think that really can suppress struggle because it shifts the attention to the individuals or the groups involved and takes the attention away from the actual issue. And, you know, this is something that is quite well researched in social movement studies around the issue of sectarianism. So where you might have a vibrant and diverse group of activists, and yes, they might have divergent interests, and it's that question of how do you put those individual interests aside in pursuit of a common goal. But what happens in a lot of movements is that they tend to retreat into, it's almost a little place of comfort. So groups will sort of retreat into what they know best or what is their clearest identity. And then we're sort of straight back to sort of tired identity politics, where it becomes, again, about the people involved and their demands for recognition instead of about the issue, which is largely or can be around redistribution. So whether that's around like class justice or expansion of rights, those redistributive elements go out the window because so much attention is focused on Me first. No, my group is more important. So when you get those sort of sectarian interests, they can actually be quite fatal to movements because, as I said, the actual issue goes out the window.
Where do people learn and how to organise rallies and marches and activism? It seems like people that are wanting to partake in this could do with some sort of mentor structure or some sort of structure around it. So then there's more of a learning, because it's not an easy feat to put on a march with thousands of people.
It really isn't. And, you know, on the surface, like when you sort of see the sort of end product of a march, you know, it's usually sort of, you know, things on the street, or you'll see the banners and you'll see people parading in the streets. That's the work that happens before that that is really what activism is. The marches or the end product is really just the kind of the cherry on the top. And so I teach a paper on social movements and protest, and, you know, this is sort of one of the things we talk about. And often the feedback from the students is, wow, I had no idea that so much work goes into being an activist. In fact, it's the behind the scenes work that goes on. That's really where those careful negotiations around competing interests and how to define the issue, that's where a lot of that work gets done. And then on the day, it's the sort of product of that labour that the public really sees. And, you know, I think, again, like this issue of representation is critical in movements, and most of the movements that I've studied, it always comes up. Who gets to speak? Who is speaking on behalf of whom? Why are they speaking on behalf of those people? And way back in the sort of probably early 2000s, it was earlier than that, there was all this sort of talk about, oh, I'm going to be the voice of the voiceless. And of course, there was a fight back against that because people are not voiceless. They've been silenced. You know, so it's sort of just learning that, and I think it's not about learning things from a textbook. I honestly think things are learned in communities, in struggle. But people learn from their mistakes. Yeah, because, I mean, representation, it has a direct bearing on the validity or authenticity of claims. So it is important. But when it becomes the most important, again, it's that thing of losing sight of the bigger issues. And it undermines solidarity. You know, there's a lot more work being done now on allyship in movement. So it's about how to be a good ally. It's a question of working out, okay, so what is the issue? And then in relation to that issue, who is the subjugated or marginalized group and who is in a privileged position? And it's not always the same group because it depends on the issue. So I think centering the issue is critical, and then working out in this context, in relation to that issue, who is subjugated, who is privileged, and then having a conversation about how the privileged group can bolster or kind of affirm the marginalized group and take direction from that group in advancing the struggle. Now, that is a whole lot of intersectional work that needs to be done, and it needs to be negotiated each and every time depending on the issue.
I was just going to say, some activism on social media has been labelled slacktivism. Can you tell me what that is and why it has this label?
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit of a negative label in the sense that, you know, I think another term for it has sort of been armchair activism, where you can kind of just be on your device and, you know, click on things or click yes on a petition or sign on an online petition or, you know, these sorts of things. But the bottom line is that struggle and activism involves people. So you cannot have any form of struggle or any form of progressive social change in the absence of people doing the action. To me, social media is a kind of tool that we can use in the 21st century, this digital world that we live in, to advance struggle. It's not unimportant. I mean, if we look at the Arab Spring, if we look at Black Lives Matter, and even the democracy protests in Hong Kong, those things would not have gone as far as they did without the assistance of digital technologies.
Yeah, I suppose social media is one of those as always, a blessing and a curse, because you get people that get that that satisfaction and feeling that they have achieved something or done something, contributed in some way by just reposting an Instagram story. But if they're already receiving that feeling that they've contributed, it might be less likely that they might contribute in a meaningful way, like a donation or actually getting out onto the streets or whatever meaningful way that protest is.
Unimportant. You know, sharing a cause is part of it. It is like getting the word out and making a message public. That is an important part of it, but it cannot happen at the expense of people who are actually willing to put their bodies on the line.
That was Associate Professor Marcel Dawson, sociologist at Otago University. So the March Against Sexual Violence didn't end up happening for a multitude of reasons last month. It was delayed, then the group's organising split up, and then they tried to do it on their own, both of which were then cancelled. So I spoke to one of the organisers from Auckland Feminist Action Group, Lily Chen, and started off by asking her about her story and how she got started in activism.
I have been a feminist since I was 13 years old, and it all started with like the internet era of third wave feminism, where everything is broadcasted on Tumblr, on Twitter, on Instagram. Feminist theory was really accessible back then, and it was democratized in the sense that it was digestible by a 13-year-old. And I just followed that pathway further and further until I was researching on my own and engaging in the wider community in terms of how I conduct my practices. I am currently the chairwoman of Campus Feminist Collective, which is a student-led feminist organization on Auckland University campus. And I am also a general executive member of Young Greens on campus. So these are the several hats I wear. And those two jobs require me to do very different sorts of mahi. For example, as a chairwoman of CFC, I am liaising with the Women's Rights Officer. I am contacting organisations across Tamaki Makaurau in order to establish that connection, in order to potentially form collaborations in campaigns that we collectively work towards.
And you're one of the organisers of the March Against Sexual Violence. Can you tell me the story of how that unfolded and what happened there?
The March Against Sexual Violence was supposed to be one of my biggest projects yet. And as a young activist, I was fully prepared to sit back and learn the ropes from seasoned veterans in the field. But soon enough, the organisation divided into two fractions. So you had Break the Silence, yeah, New Zealand, and there was Auckland Feminist Action. I was more closely linked with the latter, but also existing as like my own independent entity. We had several meetings, and I personally found it to be quite alienating, because I felt like I was constantly being talked over as the only woman colour sitting on the decision-making table. There was not a lot of inclusivity or efforts at fostering this inclusivity. If anything, it seemed like intersectionality was an afterthought. And as an intersectional feminist, that really messed with my own ideologies. I was constantly doubting myself and my position within that circle. It strained a lot of social relationships, and it kind of tarnished our image in the public eye a little.
How did that feel?
It felt incredibly invalidating, because when the media is more willing to latch onto the fact that there is leftist infighting than the fact that we're attempting to unite for a necessary cause, it feels like all of our efforts is just washed down the drain. When the feminist movement is publicized for only the bad elements of it, it feels like it's diminishing the entire movement
And it's a challenging space, activism. Sounds like some of the challenges that you guys face were having lots of different groups involved with slightly differing ideologies, and agendas, and burnout was faced by you guys, and lack of intersectionality was another challenge that was faced. Can you please elaborate on some of these challenges that are faced by grassroots activists?
For grassroots activists, especially those who come from a marginalized background, the personal is political. We do not have the privilege to divorce our lived experiences from our mahi, so the lack of intersectionality really cut me up, because it felt like my existence was being invalidated in that circle. It's a mindset of, we'll achieve this goal for all women, but you're kind of different than all women, so we'll kind of delay that until the next meeting, until the next agenda. And quickly, I experienced activist burnout, because it felt like I was constantly trying to justify my existence in that circle. Like, hey, maybe we shouldn't be racist. Maybe we should be more considerate of Tonga and Whenua, of other intersectional issues that we're obviously neglecting.
It's widely viewed that activism is an integral part of our society and the way that we make changes and move forward, and you obviously agree with that, having been part of it since such a young age. How can these challenges be fixed? What would a world look like in which you didn't have to face these challenges?
A world without these challenges would be a world that is more willing to invest in the collective, because the status quo marginalizes those who aren't engaged or don't have the resources to be engaged. And even if you're in that circle, if your identity doesn't conform to a majority, you're still pushed to the margins.
How do we combat burnout?
Burnout is an inevitable consequence of being an activist, hence why I am a strong advocate for recuperation as an integral component of being an activist. I think it's important to take time out for yourself when you are experiencing burnout, and do whatever you need, practice self-care in order to ensure that you're okay. Because at the end of the day, activism cannot exist without activists.
What have you learnt from your recent experience with the March Against Sexual Violence that you will bring into your next big project, if there will be a next big project for you?
Sexual violence is an issue very personal to me, and we're hoping to launch a similar campaign on campus, which is more collaborative and reaches across different networks of gender equity groups. So what I've learned from the March Against Sexual Violence is that intersectionality cannot be an afterthought. At the very beginning, we need to ensure we have representation from people from all walks of life at the decision-making table. And if we don't have this representation, if we don't have this diversity, how we can incorporate these elements into our corporate anyways.
And finally, what's your one key bit of advice for someone that's looking to organise a rally, a march, or take part in some activism?
Don't be afraid to collaborate with others. However, that doesn't mean you should have to compromise your ideologies. For me, diluting my ideological compass really shattered my perception of myself as a person, as an intersectional feminist, and as an activist. Activism is all based in grassroots collaborations, and as much as it's important to invest in the collective, there will be individualistic elements in terms of how you want your identity to be preserved amongst all the chaos.
I'd imagine mentors are a big part of helping and making it successful. Where do you find a mentor if you're trying to organise a rally or take part in activism?
I want to give a shout out to Migrant Zen Collective, who incredibly strong wahine who exists within that sphere. I actually attended a workshop a few weeks ago where we had the opportunity to discuss our experiences as women of color and create art on the basis of these experiences. Since this was immediately after the March against sexual violence, existing in that space where my identity is validated was really recuperating. I didn't feel like I was constantly questioning who I am because the people around me were affirming it.
That was Lily Chen, chair of Campus Feminist Collective and one of the organisers behind the March Against Sexual Violence, which didn't end up happening due to the challenges behind activism. It's really interesting to hear the theory of what Marcel was talking about actually happening in real time here in Tāmaki Makaurau. And Lily isn't alone in facing these challenges. The School Strike for Climate has marches have been one of the most inspiring movements and examples of youth activism in recent years, and it appears to be well organized, and I feel that it's made a massive positive impact. However, even within that, challenges are faced and racism has reared its ugly head. I talked to one of the organizers from 2019, Lourdes Vano, about her experiences with the School Strike for Climate space in 2019.
So I joined about halfway through the year, and this is just after sort of everything blew up. So that was when Philly was asked on the project after winning a spoken word competition. She was asked very briefly why she didn't go to the first School Strike for Climate, which was early in the year in March, because it was on the same day as Polyfest. She didn't say anything bad about School Strike for Climate, but a lot of the team took it very personally and got very defensive because they saw it as an attack. And that sort of sparked a lot of internal racism, and which was already pretty present, but it really brought it to the surface. So that's what made it quite difficult to get any further. And because we're all quite young and I've never faced any of that before, it was all very confusing for a lot of people. And a lot of that work fell to the people of colour, and there was only a few of us, so we were doing a lot more work than a lot of our Pākehā counterparts.
Can you tell me a little bit more about how the story progressed?
Yeah, I think just as it reached a national level where I was just doing more and more work, and as time went on, I felt like I had to be the one to do everything because no one else was really doing it. So that just got too much for me, and so I just ended up stepping back completely and not wanting to be involved formally, which is sort of something that a lot of us were going to do anyway because we believed that it was a high school movement, because there's a lot of environmental spaces for people who are in university. So we thought that we'll leave School Strike for Climate for people who are in school, for people who are in high school especially. So we thought that we would step back anyways. But we wanted to do this whole sort of handover thing where we could help the new members and sort of skill them up in the little that we know. That was no longer an option for me because it was just too much to still be involved in that space.
Did you have mentors?
Not formally. We had some people who were involved in Greenpeace, some people who were involved in XR, but both of those spaces are very Western and very colonial. So we were still getting a lot of like good information for a very old sort of version of environmentalism that wasn't centred in indigeneity or in people of colour at all.
Yeah, so you're facing racism, you're facing lack of intersectionality. And I suppose that leads to burnout, and you don't really have the privilege of separating yourself from these issues when all that is going on, do you?
Yeah, and I think that's what a lot of people within School Strike for Climate and in environmentalism in general don't understand, is that they could use it as an extracurricular activity, where for a lot of us it was just a part of our lives. So I think that's where a lot of the misunderstanding started, and that's why we could never really level with each other.
And at the moment, how are you sitting within the activism space? How does it make you feel?
I'm sort of not directly involved, especially with environmentalism. I'm incredibly involved with
things like Black Lives Matter, with different movements that are more centered around people of color and black people and indigenous people, just because that's been a much more safe space for me compared to environmentalism. I've moved more towards background work, which I think is sometimes more important. And I think with modern activism, a lot of people think that the only way to protest is to strike or to march. But there are a lot of things that you can do in the background. And there are a lot of things that you can do on the ground with people that are sometimes more effective.
What do you think needs to change in the activism space?
I think that sometimes the best thing that we can do is just have a good, like, sit down and a good cup of tea and talk to each other about these things, because I think we get wrapped up in a lot of semantics and in our own bureaucracy that we create. I think with school strike, a lot of the excuses that I got was like, oh, it's not the right time, like, we've got a strike next week, blah, 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 blah. So just having time to actually sit down and air out everything and have everybody on the same page would be really beneficial. But again, it has to be in a much more intersectional space, because it shouldn't be people like me who are having to lead this conversation, and it shouldn't fall to me to sort of initiate that process. And I think, I think people just need to sit down with each other and have a good talk about it.
That was Lourdes Varno, one of the 2019 organisers of School Strike for Climate and a social media activist. I want to thank everyone who talked to me on this topic. It seems like the challenges of activism sometimes take away from the important topics that people are passionate about. But as we know, activism also creates that amazing connection, education and movement.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.